This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 207. What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
And my name, as always, is John.
And we are social distancing recording once again this week.
Yeah. Up here in Maine, where, you know, it's mid-April, but we got a foot of snow dumped on us and 200,000 people lost power for the weekend because it's fucking Maine.
Yep. And right now it's 50 mile an hour winds outside, gusting that is, and it's annoying. And hopefully, we keep power.
Push the snow back.
Yeah. And the rain we got today did push the snow back quite a bit. Yeah. Last Friday, I got to work and signed in and got all hooked in. And about an hour and a half into my workday, a text came out saying the state's closed because of the weather. I'm like, that would have been nice to know a couple hours ago. Before I left the house to get here.
I can't believe she waited that long to pull the trigger on it. And a lot of it was because so many people are working remotely and none of us had power.
Yeah. I know that's the majority of it. Kate, for instance, in her unit, there's like six people. She was the only one that had both power and internet. So she was the only one working. And she was okay with that, and she didn't feel jealous of everyone else because they made them use their time to make up for not being able to work that day.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So,
we all got admin time.
Yeah. So I watched some shows and stuff. Did you watch me shoes and stuff?
I did. What'd you watch?
Did you watch the that new episode with Joel McHale of Tiger King there?
No, I did not.
Okay, that's actually what we're watching. When I texted you and said, hey, I'm going to be 10 minutes late because I had to put Wesley to bed still, but we were finishing that.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Is it trashy as the rest of it?
No, it's not at all, because it's Joel McHale literally sitting on his couch with earbuds in. And he interviews several of the key cast members one at a time.
Oh.
And it's just like, so how has your life changed since this docuseries came out, you know? And of course, being Joel McHale, it's funny, and he has a lot of good humor in there. And they talk about what they're doing now, what's it like being recognized, what they really think of Joe Exotic, things like that. It's actually really interesting. It's only 40 minutes long. It went by really fast. If you watch the first seven episodes, this is well worth watching.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably check it out then. I do like Joel McHale.
Yeah, Joel McHale is funny. Yeah.
His little intro, speaking of like, Joel McHale, No, go ahead.
Well, no, his intro he did at the beginning is just like, so I contacted Netflix and said, how about we do an after show about this docuseries and we can make it big and extravagant just like it was. And they said, we'll send you an iPhone. Have fun.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, speaking of Joe.
Yeah. Speaking of Joel McHale, I was watching something on Netflix recently. I can't remember what it was. I think it was like a comedy special, female comedian. She's 25. Funny as shit. But at the end of it, up next, and I never clicked on it because I was playing a game at the same time that was just on in the background. And the up next was Community, so that started playing, and I went, well, fuck yeah, I'm going to watch this. So I'm like five or six episodes in and loving it once again.
All six seasons are on what's it called? Yeah, Netflix now. I'm hoping this leads to them making a movie.
I saw something today. I didn't read the article, but I saw the headline that said one of the stars of Community says that a movie is even more likely now than before.
I hope so. Six episodes in a movie, six seasons in a movie, you know, just like the Cake should have been.
No. Oh, Jesus. Oh, Abed.
Hey, speaking of classic shows kind of coming back, in a couple weeks here, this weekend maybe it is, whatever, Entertainment Weekly is promoting that the cast of Chuck is going to get together for a table read via Zoom.
Nice.
Let's do a table read. I don't know if it's a new episode or a classic episode, but that seems kind of cool.
I think a lot of the table reads that they've been doing for different shows are classic episodes, but that's still cool. I miss those guys.
Yeah, it's kind of amazing. Dude. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of amazing this time we're in right now and thinking about how like all these music acts are doing like streaming live acoustic, mostly concerts from their homes where they just sit in front of the thing and play music for a while.
Yep.
It's kind of cool, and to see how all these places are coming up with alternative ways to provide entertainment for the masses.
Absolutely. Yeah, every night around like 8 o'clock or so, my phone gives me an Instagram update that Lucky Yates has gone live with a video.
What's that?
He plays Dr. Krieger on Archer, and he's just reading bedtime stories.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yep.
In the Dr. Krieger voice?
I don't know. I've never actually tuned into one, but I would assume so. He's a comedian after all, so.
You know, it's kind of funny. I was kind of itching to watch some X-Files today, and I really don't know why. I mean, I love the show. I just haven't watched it in forever. But yeah, I just had this real big itch to watch X-Files. And when my shift got over at 11, at 4, I went upstairs, and I didn't go deep classic. I actually went with season 10, episode 3, Mulder and Scully Meet the Weremonster, because it is just so hilarious. I absolutely love that episode so much.
It was so good.
It
was really like the only redeeming thing out of these late seasons.
Well, that's your opinion. I'm not going to say they are the greatest episodes in the world, but I will say it was kind of amazing that, like, after 18 years or whatever it was, 17 years, we got, you know, well, we got the movie, but I mean, we got new X-Files episodes, and it's like better than nothing. It's better than, like, you know, a lot of shows like Serenity. No new episodes of that. That'd be amazing. Oh.
I thought you were comparing the two of them, and I thought you were saying that, you know, that this most recent season of X-Files was better than Serenity, and I was going to hang
No. What I mean is it's better than the zero we've gotten from some of our other favorite classic shows, you know, like, and I was hoping with Firefly we'd get two episodes again because of, like, the resurgence we've had in shows, like, you know, Roseanne came back, and then she got killed off, and they just been running with the Connors, which is a good show that I'm enjoying. And, you know, like, was it Mad About You came back? I didn't watch any, but it was on the, and then Will and Grace came back for a couple seasons, and I don't know. It'd be kind of neat.
I think one of the keys with all those shows is that if you look back, none of them were doing anything. Like, none of those actors had anything going on, so it was easier to do it. Whereas the cast and crew of Firefly / Serenity, you know, most of them have got other stuff going on and consistently.
That is true. That is very true.
I would love to see more of it, but.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, anyways, going to current stuff, I did finish up the first season of What We Do in the Shadows.
What'd you think by the end?
Oh, I was kind of hooked after the first few episodes, and then I kind of forgot about it a little bit, and then Hulu reminded me that I hadn't watched it all yet. But yeah, it's really good, and I think what's great about it is that, you know, the actors playing, you know, Nandor, Laszlo, and Nadja, they are very committed to their characters and to what they're doing. Even when they're doing something like stupid or acting dumb, they're not playing it as campy, over the top, dumb or stupid. They're like deadly serious playing the role they are, but they're kind of stupid. So
Mm-hmm.
I think one of my favorites was Guillermo finding out that he is a descendant of Van Helsing in the last episode. And then, like, he's looking back, like, did he kill those other vampires he killed on purpose?
Exactly.
Did he accidentally kill Nandor on purpose? And then, like, when he brought, my favorite is when he brought, like, the wooden stakes to help Laszlo with his hedge creation to write it upright or whatever. And he's like, wooden stakes? What's wrong with you? I ordered them from Amazon. Well, send them back, you know.
It was such a cool twist because then they go back through some of the episodes showing you scenes, and it's like, oh, was this just in his blood the whole time?
Yeah, exactly. And my absolute favorite of all is when Jeff Suckler, the reincarnation of Nadja's former lover, when we find out in beheaded, and they show paintings or this or that of him being beheaded, or you know, drawings or something. And then when he's beheading the running, and he's in the painting, you know, cutting his head off or chopping it off or sawing it off or whatever it is. I think that's hilarious.
Absolutely.
And then the last time when she's like, well, because he's going to cut his head off again for the last time. And she's like, no, don't decapitate. Let him actually live one full life. Fine, you may go. And he rides off on his motorcycle, but then he accidentally decapitates himself on the wire that Laszlo had been using to hold up the hedge there.
Yep.
I had to pause it. I was laughing so hard on that one. It's like, if you would have said.
Even though I had basically run down the entire thing for you and told you all about it, did you still enjoy the Council of Vampires?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Wesley.
Yeah.
Wesley had to Skype in.
Yeah. And he had shitty service.
Yep.
And then the other vampires, like Evan Rachel Wood, you know, the Immortal Prince of the Undead, and she's like, just call me Evan.
Yeah.
Or just all of them, you know. And then, like, Taiki Waititi and Jonathan Bro and Jeremy Clement reprising their roles. Clement reprising their roles from the original film.
Yep.
And
Paul Rubens. Fucking Paul Rubens.
Paul Rubens. As Paul, I like how like Tilda Swinton played Tilda, Everett Trio played Evan, Danny Trio played Danny, the Hispanic tattooed member of the council. Paul Rubens was just Paul, but he was playing his character from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I thought that was great.
They talked about Brad and Tom.
Yeah, Brad and Tom. Yeah, they didn't want to make. Well, I understand that. Kiefer, what's he got going on? You know. Yeah. I thought it was pretty darn good. The orgy episode was hilarious.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. The second season does start up here within the next week or two, I think.
April 16th. So this weekend.
This week.
Yeah. And Mark Hamill's in the second season.
Yes. And they'll be on Hulu the day after they're on FX. So that's good.
Yes, which is even better. So that way you can stay caught up.
Yep.
It week by week. So no, I really, really enjoyed it, and I also will give it a hard sell.
Good. Excellent.
I watched Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist today, actually. Not last night's episode, but last week's episode. Well, it wasn't on last night. Last week's episode.
Right. Yeah.
It was a good one. The dad and his nurse singing Sound of Silence together.
Hmm.
And actually, the deaf daughter there signing, this is my fight song or whatever that song is.
Yes.
That whole dancing, that actually got really emotional somehow.
It did.
Yeah.
It did. Like, no words whatsoever. I kind of really liked that all of them were signing it, you know, all the dancers and her.
It was just like a violin in playing or some sort of string instrument, not a guitar, but like a violin or a cello or something was playing the music while they were signing to it. I mean, it was tremendous.
It was tremendous. Yeah, I really, really liked that. I loved the dance number that accompanied the one at the end there. God, what was the name of it? I forgot.
Yeah, the one where...
The one with the fiancés.
Yes, where it looked like they broke up.
Yeah, yeah. God, I can't remember the name of the song, but it was just, it was so well done. Like, the two of them choreographed it so well. Like, when she falls backwards and he just catches her with the one hand, and it was awesome.
Yeah, no, the show's is, I don't know, it's a fun show. It's weird at times, obviously, but it's a fun show, and I enjoy the hell out of it, so.
I love it right to death.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I love it. What's that?
Do you think last night was the season finale?
No, last night it wasn't on.
I mean, you know what I mean. The last episode, the fifth.
Oh, I don't. I have a feeling that they're going to do a season finale that'll have to do with Dad's passing, since they said that he only had a few weeks left.
Oh, okay. You know, I just looked it up, and there's was supposed to be on the 19th and the 26th of shows as well. So I don't know if that's going to finish it out with 11 episodes or.
Gotcha. I really hope this comes back for another season.
This just started up in January. It was a mid-season replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, but I'm just reading here. They did finish filming at the end of January, so there is a so they do have all the episodes in the can.
Excellent. I do appreciate that.
What you got?
I finished a couple of shows on Netflix. I won't get too deep, but I finished this season of Paradise PD because it's animated. You know, it's not the type of thing where I need to watch one a week. It turned out pretty well. They had some funny episodes. They had a crossover episode with Brickleberry that was on.
That's funny.
Oh, it was great because, you know, it's done by the same people and they have the same voices for a couple of the characters. And so that was fun. But the in the first season, you know how you had the black cop who turned out to be the kingpin, and they really build on that. Like, there's a whole story behind it. So it actually turned out really well. I liked it. I would definitely say if you like the first season, check out the second season. And I also finished the first season of Feel Good. I don't remember if I told you I'd started watching this one, but this is the one with the, Canadian comedian who is a former, cocaine addict and I think heroin as well. And, she's cleaned up, but now she meets this woman at one of her shows and the woman kind of falls for her and they start a relationship. And then the whole thing, it's six episodes long and it's comedy with drama, but it's not like canned laughter comedy. You know, it's just like, it's a funny show, but it has drama and it's just really well done. Like, I really enjoyed it. The relationships and the problems that they run into actually felt like organic and real. They didn't feel forced or anything, or, you know, like, oh, we're going to make this the perfect lesbian relationship. They actually felt like the fights that they had felt like fights that you would have with a girlfriend or a wife or something like that. So I don't know. I really enjoyed it. It was only six episodes. They're about a half an hour each. I give it a sell. I don't know if I'd give it a hard sell. You have to kind of like that kind of stuff, but I enjoyed it.
Nice.
Yeah.
The wife and I did check out one show you recommended.
What's that?
Modern Love.
Which was actually recommended to me from another friend who said, there's eight episodes. You can watch them in any order. Just watch the eighth one last. And I said, well, all right. So what'd you guys think?
We watched just one episode.
Yep.
We watched the first one, When the Doorman Is Your Main Man, with the mom from How I Met Your Mother there. And
yes.
We really enjoyed it. I mean, I thought it was a really, really good show.
It's an anthology show, so it kind of had a feel like Twilight Zone, except for not Twilight Zone.
No, clearly not.
Oh, like, there's no twists or turns, but... Uh-oh, what am I holding
Michael cried.
Michael that's cried. Okay.
That's my wife being supportive. did you watch one episode? Did you watch them all?
Just the one. I just watched the one. I want to do this one a week because I really enjoyed the one that I watched. In fact, I started watching it as a background show while I was playing a game, and I liked it so much that I was like, I need to watch this when I'm not playing a game. And I restarted it from the beginning and watched it, and I really appreciated it.
Yeah, I liked it a lot. I mean, the opening where she's walking home with her date, and she's like, all right, well, you can just say bye here. And he's like, what? No, I can walk to your apartment. No, that's okay. What, is your dad like waiting on the porch with a shotgun? No, my doorman is. What? Yeah, he's a little protective, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I like when he can see them and he kisses her and he touches her butt. And then all of a sudden, you know, he calls for the taxi and sends it over to the...
She's like, oh, here's your taxi. He's like, I didn't even. Okay.
Yeah. And yeah, I don't know. I like the relationship between the two of them, you know, and she finds out she's pregnant, and she looks at her phone. And it's like mom, dad, sister. And then she cut to crying in Guzman's arms.
Yes. So, and I love the fact that Guzman was a strong character, and he was, you know, almost like the Mr. Miyagi type. And you knew that he was a war veteran because he said, you know, you can learn a lot about a person from staring at them through a sniper scope.
Yes.
But, like, he was never a love interest. It was never even hinted that he would be a love interest. He was always like a father figure.
That's what my wife commented, that she was so happy that they didn't have them end up together, if you will.
Right. Not that it would have been creepy, just I really like the fact that he got to be a father figure and then even a grandfather figure.
Yep. And it's amazing, like, I don't know, Guzman seemed like a really cool character, and he supported them, and then she gets that job, you know, in California, and, you know, he's obviously very smitten with her daughter, who's like 4 or 5 by now or something like that, mm-hmm. and he's like, when do you leave? And she's like, well, I don't know when do you leave? And then when she comes back 4 years later with her boyfriend, she's just like, all right, you need to... She's, you know, prepping him because she wants Guzman to approve of him. So I just thought that was hilarious.
It's a great show. I don't know if the other episodes are going to be as good. I hope they are.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, that's the name of the show. It's on Amazon, Modern Love. And it's just supposed to be, you know, tales of dating and love in the modern age. And I loved it. It really brought out the romantic in me.
I feel like every episode probably takes place in New York City.
It's quite possible, yeah.
It's, you know, every episode's about a half an hour long. It says 29 to 35 minutes, which I think is perfect. And it's a true anthology in reference to that. It is a different episode a different story every episode, different actors and actresses. You know, it looks like Judd Hirsch is in there a little bit because he plays a cop, a vendor, and a taxi driver. So, I mean... whatever, but it's not like these new style shows that they call anthologies, like American Horror Story, because every season's a new story. You know, it's a genuine anthology where every episode's a new story. And it says that Amazon's renewed it for a second season.
Awesome. That'll be even more exciting. And I'm definitely slow playing this one episode a week.
Me too. And what's funny is it's been on Amazon for 6 months now. It got dropped in October.
So. Well, we've been watching a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, we have been. Like, and I've actually kind of reduced what I've watched, even though I'm home more.
Yep.
Well, I guess I'm watching more wrestling, older wrestling now than other stuff. But.
Well, stuff that Amazon has dropped and has just kind of sat there. I finally, as I told you earlier, I finally made myself sit down and fully watch the first episode of Homecoming. That one with Julia Roberts. Because I had seen articles saying that they've got a second season coming and they're going to have a new female lead. So I was like, all right, it's a Sam Esmail show, which is automatically awesome. And
I didn't realize it was.
Yeah. And it feels weird. Okay. So you're having, there's a flash forward part of it and there's a regular part of it. And the regular part of it is she's working at this place. It's called the Homecoming Center. And apparently it's for veterans, young veterans who have gotten back from war, and They're there to be rehabilitated, but there's like part of the first episode, and these are only like half hour episodes, which is weird. She's talking to her boss, Bobby Cannavale, who's awesome, on the phone. And he's basically like, he's telling her that she needs to get the information out of them. They need to know what they saw, what they know, etc. So there's obviously something sinister going on. But then interspersed with that, we get these, at first I thought they were flashbacks, but they're flash forwards, where she's working in a diner as a waitress, and some guy from the Department of Defense wants to ask her questions about the time when she worked at Homecoming. And she's like, look, I don't remember much of that. I can't help you. So he's like, look, just talk to me, blah, blah, blah. She's like, fine, I'll take a break in a few minutes. Meet me out back. Then their meeting comes at the end of the episode. And the really weird thing is that it's all shot like on an iPhone in vertical, not in panorama, in vertical. So it's kind of disjarring at first, but it feels right at home for Sam Esmail. It's piqued my curiosity for sure. I definitely want to watch more. I'm going to slow play it. But I was glad that I finally sat down and watched it, and I'm already like wondering what some of the mysteries are that are going on.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's a half an hour. It couldn't hurt you to try it out once, but
yeah, I mean, I can give that a go. Julie Roberts is a talented actress, so.
Yep, Bobby Cannavale.
Awesome. Yeah, absolutely. I got a month of Shudder. And I sat down and watched the first episode of Creepshow.
What'd you think?
It was okay. It was good. I mean, the first story is the Stephen King story. Each episode had two stories. And I'd already kind of – I knew the story going in. I had read it, so that was okay. I mean, you know, Tobin Bell was in it, and it was more like more 80-ish than I thought it would be when it came to the effects.
Oh no, I thought you were going to say that came to the story.
Yeah, I know. When it came to kind of the effects, I mean, it's got an animated opening, animated wraparounds with a Crypt Keeper type cartoon character. But what's animated, it's like you're looking at a comic book. So like they show you the cover, they open it up, you see like an ad, it turns the page, and then we get the first story and it zooms in and now it's live action. And then when that story's over, it turns the page, you see a couple pages of ads, you know, things for like 3D glasses and like, you know, things from like the old catalog, like things you never knew existed and couldn't possibly live without, stuff like that.
Oh, and yeah.
Yeah, and then it gets to the next story. And I mean, I'm going to keep watching it. It was enjoyable. It's worth my free month of Shudder. There's a couple other movies on there I want to check out, like Satanic Panic is on there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I want to watch that. But yeah, it was good. I mean, it's again, this is a true anthology series. Each episode is a horror story of itself. But there's another series on there I'm excited to check out at some point. May even watch a new episode tonight. Or an episode tonight, but it's I think it's only six episodes. It's called Cursed, and it's about like alleged cursed films, like, you know, Poltergeist, The Exorcist, Twilight Zone, the movie. It's a documentary series, so I'm curious to check that out. Yeah.
See, I also took advantage of the free month of Shudder. The only problem is that apparently my TV doesn't have an app for it.
Oh.
Yeah, so
be annoying.
I'd have to watch it on like my laptop. It's not that big of a deal, but certainly with all the other stuff that I have available to me to watch, it suddenly became a lower priority because I'm like, well, I can watch any of this stuff on my TV, but I'd have to switch over and actually go to their website.
Yeah, that's kind of like I love New Japan World, and I watch it on my tablet when I was at work on midnight shift, but when I'm home and I watch it, it's like, I don't want to watch it on my tablet or my laptop because there's no Roku app for it. However, Amazon has an app for it. So last year at Christmas time, when they were doing the big Amazon sale, I bought a Fire Stick for my TV for $20.
Oh, yep.
I could have the New Japan app.
Yep.
I could have the New Japan app and watch it on my TV. So
I have a Fire Stick. Maybe I should look into plugging that. Maybe. We'll see.
I mean, like, Shudder's got a Roku app, obviously, because that's what I have as a Roku TV. So I don't know. They got all the Friday the 13th on there now, and a few other stuff. I mean, and Shudder's only like $4.99 a month. I mean, it's not expensive, even just to pay for it monthly. But I don't need to add another service type of thing.
Exactly. That's exactly it. You know, and that's again why I'm hemming and hawing about like actually sitting down and trying to watch it. Cause it's the same way. I'm like, geez, you know, am I going to want to commit to this by watching it on something else? When again, I've got all these new shows that I'm watching and good stuff. Although.
It depends on what you're looking for, I guess, you know.
Yeah.
A free month is a free month, and I do want to check out Creepshow. And I get what you're saying. If I didn't have the app for my TV, I probably wouldn't have done it either.
Right. So, I will.
Go ahead.
For now, I'll wait for your, you know, reviews of things. But yeah, how about that Rookie, the overnight?
Yeah, I thought it was actually going to focus more on the overnight shift, but it didn't.
Thank you. Me too.
I mean, was it? I can't think of his name right now. Jackson. Him and his partner were working the overnight shift because she was going to go away with her boyfriend, and we get to see 5 minutes of them on the overnight shift together at the end when he's like, "Oh, he's probably going to propose to you on this epic vacation," and now she's paranoid and this and that. But I mean, otherwise, I thought they were all going to be on the midnight shift and dragging ass, but no, it's literally just them, unless they're trying to say Nathan Fillion's character with his T.O. staying the night at her ex's house because their daughter heard someone screaming and saw a woman with a bloody hand happened at night. I don't know, but it wasn't the overnight shift like I expected.
Right. Yeah, I was under the same impression. I thought, oh, this is going to be, you know, I hate to say a gimmick episode, but basically that, you know, like, oh, this is going to be an episode that focuses completely on them doing overnight shifts, and it wasn't.
Yeah, no, definitely wasn't at all.
It was still a solid episode, though.
Oh, yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I thought it was great, but yeah, you're right. It just wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
It was cheesy as hell, but I got to say, I loved the cold open with the American Idol thing.
Oh, that was, yes, you did tell me you had a good cold open. Yes, that was fantastic. that was actually quite fantastic.
They go to, you know, get the guy who's causing a scene and didn't realize that, you know, Chen got dragged right on the stage. They were just like, no, come on in here, talk to Carson. And she kind of fangirled out, oh my God, it's you. Yeah, okay, this is a cool gimmick. What's this all about? And she's he's like, never mind, just get out there and sing for them.
Yeah, I like the fact that she was getting all kind of nutted up about it. And then finally she was just like, well, I do got this sticker on right here. When she's like, are you supposed to be here? And then she sang a great song. Like, holy cow.
Aretha.
Yeah. Sounded awesome.
And then they all wanted her to stay.
Yeah. And then they're like, they were going to give her one of the passes or something. And she's like, I got to go. I got to go. Here's something.
And the Bradford.
Yeah. What's that? Bradford. What are you doing? Well, no. Sorry. Go ahead. Yeah. Bradford. Go ahead.
No, that's just what I was going to say was exactly that. Bradford was just like, what are you doing? Let's go. And like, he didn't even say like, you did a good job or even acknowledge that she was actually just auditioning in front of those three. You know, it didn't even faze him. He was just like, we got a job to do. Let's go.
I actually don't think he knew. I think he came back.
He got her off the stage.
Well, no, but like she heard him yell going, boo, where are you? And then she's I gotta go. And then ran to the door. When she opened the door, he was right there. He was like, where have you been? We gotta go. So I don't even think he knew.
Gotcha.
So on the Tiger King special, Joe McHale, that we watched earlier today, one of the things that Kate and I kept commenting about is like, he can actually sing really good. Like all those times where they played his music or, you know what I mean? It's like his music videos, he actually sounds really good. His ex-husband there, the one that had no teeth, he's got teeth now. He's like, that wasn't him singing. He sings terrible. So he's claiming that he had someone else singing for him. But We'll awesome. See.
Or conspiracy.
Exactly, yeah. Anywho.
Chen does end up dealing with that Spanish reporter who wants to look at like the CAD reports. And she's like, oh, I usually do, what is it, like gossip or fashion or something like that. And she's just looking for a big break. And she ends up using her.
Yeah, oh, big time. Yeah.
To basically try to get
Chen in some serious trouble.
Yep. Yep. Basically tries to get a sleazy story, a tabloid story, rather than going for an actual real story, and almost falls off the building. They almost lose their collar of the person who's been, you know, it's a tag team where prostitute goes in, gets a guy all comfy, and then somebody else comes in and robs him.
Yep. Kind of a classic type of thing.
Yep. Classic bait and switch kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Nolan gets himself in another odd predicament where they solve the crisis at the ex's house, and then when he sees the dog that was missing, goes to look for it and sees the neighbor across the street tied up and then gets hit in the head and then hung from the... It was just... My son and I were watching it together, and I just kind of looked at him and went, he really gets himself in some pretty unrealistic predicaments week after week after week. Like,
yeah, he really does.
It is almost farcical the way it happens. I get it. It's a story. It's a fictional show. You know, if it's not entertaining, it's not exciting. But, I mean, there was enough going on in the episode about adding that to it. I mean, he gets put in peril so much that, like, when they want you to feel the person, like, it's almost becomes, it's like taking horrible 911 calls one after another. You get just kind of cold to them because you're just so used to it. It's the same thing. It's like you can't suspend your disbelief every single time when, you know, someone gets put in peril because it happens so often that it's not believable, you know?
Right.
Like
I was going to say, then again, just to build on your analogy, there are certain times, like we'll say that one girl who would call up 911 and say that a gang of people beat her up and threw her down in a ditch. And when paramedics and police would show up, she had no visible bruises, no visible breaks, cuts, tears, abrasions, and she had just run away from her group home. And was a compulsive liar. And this happened over and over again. So in those cases, kind of like with him getting into peril all the time, you're like, okay, enough is enough.
Right. Here's the thing. Thanks to Game of Thrones, we know any character on a show can die. They're not going to kill Nolan. You know what I mean? Right. Like, they're not going to kill Nolan because they can't.
And my
He's the star of the show. And without him, there isn't a show. They haven't established, like, there's other great characters. Bradford couldn't carry the show because you need him in small doses, basically.
Yeah.
But, you know, like when Chen got captured and buried in the can, in the drum, in the ground and everything, there's a good chance she could have died, you know, like that's a possibility.
The captain there, you know, captain did actually die.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Like when the captain did actually die. So, yeah, it's one of those things where when it's the lead character all the time, it's like, I don't know. And I don't know if people felt this way in the 80s on when they happened on those type of police dramas and shit, like Miami Vice or Simon or whatever. But I still love the show. I'll keep watching it.
Yep. Yeah, I still enjoy it quite a bit as well.
There was no school this week.
Correct.
And New Amsterdam must be done, or is they just on a big hiatus?
No, I just saw a commercial for it the other day, so they're still on hiatus.
All right. It's hard to tell now with shows being ended so early or being ended prematurely now.
Right.
Which one, you know, it's like the writer's strike all over again, sort of, except worse because people are dying.
Right.
Oh, yeah, April 14th, so it's on tomorrow night.
Oh, there you go. I got to tell you, I watched the first episode of a new show on Netflix. It's called Bruise Brothers. Brews. It's these.
Yeah,
they brew beer. They do, you know, like their own brewery and stuff like that. I didn't like it. Like, I can see that they did, you know, they worked at it to get some humor in there, and it wasn't bad, but it definitely was not the type of thing. Like, halfway through it, I was like, okay, I'm going to finish this episode, then I'll probably never come back. Enjoy it. It's just, it wasn't
a sales pitch like that. I don't think I will.
No, it just, it really, it felt kind of lowbrow. I don't know. I didn't like it. So
I won't be going back. Not even going to bother.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, if that's how you feel about it, it's like, you know what? I'm not even going to bother then. Because
but you and I disagree on some things.
Yeah, but the show didn't really appeal to me enough anyways initially to make me want to go, I'm going to check this out. It's just hearing you say, oh, I watched this. Like, oh, okay, well, let's see what you have to say about it.
Yep.
So that's kind of, I mean, a lot of our weekly shows weren't even on this week. So I know we have Hunters, we have Westworld, and we have
Blacklist
to talk about. So do you want to talk about Hunters?
Yeah, speaking of what you were saying with, you know, thanks to Game of Thrones, this episode was brutal. Of course, all the episodes kind of pick up right where the last one left off. So, you know, the FBI lady, she got the secret package there, the envelope of all the stuff about Meyer and, you know, from the American who's working with the Germans. And he basically put her on to Meyer and said, you know, you got everything that you need right there. Go do it. And she does. She gets a warrant to search his place. And he, you know, in true Hunter's fashion, they have it all covered up and hidden by the time she gets there. But she still arrests him and takes him downtown. And the
enemy of my enemy is my friend type of scenario.
Right, because, you know, as she's interrogating him, he's basically like, you have no idea what you're doing. She's like, yeah, I do, and I don't want more people to die, so why don't you give me this information so that I can do it, because you're an old man and you can't do this on your own.
Well, what I like is it looks like a real interrogation, and then when she shuts the recording off, she's like, okay, I know there's Nazis. We need to stop them, but...
Yeah. I know that there's Nazis, and I love her thing with the paperclip, you know? This file had a paperclip on it, which means that there were more papers, which tells me that somebody in the American government put these Nazis here. So you need to come clean with me, talk to me about this, and we'll work together.
He's not really interested in that.
Nope. No, he's not. Because she wants to bring them to justice. He wants to kill them.
Yes.
So that's everything going on with Meyer, other than the fact that Jonah does confront him and says, you know, you're my grandfather. And Meyer's like, yeah, I am. And I didn't tell you because your grandmother didn't want it that way. She was protecting you. And then he gets carted away by the FBI. So he doesn't really get to, you know, explain more. But Jonah's like, fuck him. And meanwhile, the couple there who will always be Saul from, Warehouse 13, and
what a great show that was.
Oh, it was. Anyway, him and his wife, they have that German still tied up in the basement, and they're both trying to figure out what they want to do about it. You know, do we kill him? And they have these, you know, vivid hallucinations, if you will, you know, visions of like him telling them, your son is not proud of you. He knows you're a murderer. You suck, blah, 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 blah. So they're going to, but he, you know, Saul is shaking. His gun is shaking. He doesn't really want to, like, he doesn't want to become a murderer. They've been fine up till this point because everybody else has been doing the killing for them. You know, they've just been like helping out, fixing stuff, breaking stuff, you know. This time they have to actually pull the trigger. And so it's much harder for them to kill someone in cold blood. And that's why he's shaking. And then Jonah shows up to say, Meyer's been captured. We got to go do something. The Germans are going to unleash a chemical weapon tonight. in New York. Because he finally heard the tune coming from the music box and talked. I mean, it was very complex, but he was talking about how, like,
the
record and the radio station.
The music box at 4/4 time. So every fourth line that lines up, and that's when you get it was very complex.
Yeah. Yeah. But he's figured it out and he got coordinates, and the coordinates take, you know, part of the team to the power transfer station that gets bombed. Like the woman that went there, Ava, that they let get away earlier because, you know, Jonah couldn't pull the trigger because she had a kid with her. So she escaped and she set up all the bombs and touched it off. It must have been on a timer because even though she was killed by the nun.
Well, that's where we get the title of the episode, Shalom, motherfucker.
Yes. I kept waiting for it because I always find a way to incorporate that.
Yes. After the Nazi woman cuts a promo about how disgusting Jews are and blah, blah, blah. And Japs and everybody else. And then you hear like the cocking of the gun and it's Shalom, motherfucker. Shot in the head.
But the American there who's been working for the Germans, he heads down in the subway and Murray and Jonah and Lenny? Is it
Lonnie?
Lonnie, thank you. They all tail him down there and they kind of have him sandwiched in, and he leaves his backpack on the train and then departs.
Yeah, he jumps off the train fast. He jumps off the train fast enough that Jonah and Murray can't exit the train.
Right. Realize until later that he left his backpack behind, but Lonnie is tailing him, and you know, it's a very intense scene of Lonnie tailing him, Jonah and Murray discovering what we all knew, which is that there's a bomb in the backpack, and padlocked with a giant chain to the subway bench. And
I'm sorry, hold on. You know, my favorite scene in that is when the black guy finds the backpack, and Jonah's like, "No, you need to leave that." And he's like, "No way, man, I found it first." He's like, "What, you want money? I'll give you like $10. He takes his wallet out and he's like, "What are you doing?" He pulls a gun and points it at the guy. And the guy's like, "Oh," and he walks off. Everybody's like, "Don't take your wallet out on the subway. What are you, crazy?"
As he's waving a gun around. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So basically Murray tells Jonah to get everybody out of that car and push him down as far as he can. So Jonah does that with the gun. He's like, "I'm not going to take your money. I'm not going to shoot you. Just everybody move."
I do, and like that. I don't want your money.
But Murray tries to disarm the bomb. He keeps cutting wires and it's not working. And then he has another, you know, quote unquote hallucination of his son reaching out his hand. Oh, and
that was just,
it was beautiful. Yeah. And then Murray blows up. And
he sees his son and holds his son's hand. I'm just like, "Oh shit, is he dead already?"
Right.
Like that, are we going to cut to like the scene of an explosion now?
Right.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Lonnie tailing the guy, and you know that it's coming because this guy is good, and Lonnie keeps falling behind, and he finally goes to catch up with him, and the lights go out because all the bombs went off at the power plant. And when they do go off, all the people are moving around. They're kind of bumping into him, walking past him. And then that American comes out of nowhere and stabs Lonnie right in the gut, twists the knife, and then names one of his movies like Bullets on Mars. That was an underrated movie. I thought it was great. And then leaves him on the floor to die. So allegedly we've lost two of our team members. Lonnie could still be alive, but I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't know about Lonnie either. I mean, Murray is definitely dead.
Yeah.
But we don't know about Lonnie, obviously. And it just seems like there's a good chance that he's not around either.
Yep. It was a hard episode to watch.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was a good episode. They definitely advanced the story, but holy cow.
Yeah.
Killing Murray like that, that really sucked.
It really did. And Lonnie. Like, I like both of them.
I did like both of them. Has this been renewed for a second season yet, do you know?
I do not know. I haven't heard anything saying one way or the other.
All right, I was just curious if you had heard anything.
Yeah, I think we still got like three more episodes. There's a lot of them.
I think you're right.
So
yeah, we got the
blacklist.
10, so I think we should just watch one again.
Yep.
And then we report can watch 8, 9, and 10. We can watch 9 and 10 the week after and finish it up. Yeah?
Yep.
So we have two episodes of The Blacklist to chat about because I didn't watch the week before.
Right.
I've watched them both now. Okay.
I'm honestly surprised that you went back and watched it.
Well, I just said, screw it. Why not? I might as well. I could have done without it. I guess not. No, I'm glad I did. Because it's just like, why have not watched one episode of the show, for crying out loud. Yeah, it's definitely not like it was. It's losing its steam. They haven't said that this is the final episode yet.
Nope.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, I think they renewed it for another season.
Say again?
Which was I think they have renewed it for another season, which was shocking to me.
Yes, you're right. They did. So anyway, I did go back and I watched the Newton Purcell episode, but whatever. I want to talk about the guy in the last episode, because this week's episode was actually really good.
I knew as soon as they said the Alaska Triangle, you'd be in.
Yes. Well, I was. I had never heard of the Alaska Triangle that I can think of. So, now I had to go look to see if this was a thing or they made it up. No, it's a thing. It was a little too convenient that... All right, so Red finds some shipment that was stolen. He gets another shipment stolen. So they go up to investigate it, and we finally get the backstory on, I want to call her Chen. That's not her name.
The new
member of the team.
Yep. It escapes me, but go on. Or you're looking it up.
Debbie, I'm trying to find it. Park. Alina Park. Yeah. So she came from Alaska, and so Harold's like, you're going back there with the other people on the team. And she's like, I shouldn't go. And then we find out her whole backstory, where her mom died from an overdose. She was blaming the boyfriend. She tried finding the boyfriend for years. Some guy in a prison, in a county lockup, got the shit kicked out of him. The FBI and the local police covered it up, and they shipped her out. So that's kind of her whole story.
They covered it up with the express rule that she would never come back.
Yes. And not only did she come back, but she had a notice from Harold Cooper as to why she was there. So,
yep.
And if I remember correctly, Elizabeth knew all about this, but like Harold doesn't and the rest of the team doesn't. So... essentially, there's this Alaska native who was trained during the Cold War to be counterterrorism, and they promised him land and buildings and all kinds of stuff. And then, of course, when the Cold War ended, they reneged all that. So, of course, he's got an issue with the government.
Right.
And now him and his men just hide out at this camp, and they hijack stuff and sell it for money. That's what they do.
They
crossed Red, so now they're being hunted, basically. And we get to see their whole deal, how they set it up. And then there's this mystery guy that was found in the back of one of Red's trucks that were recovered. And Park, of course, is captured and put in there with him. And the long and the short of it, this is the guy she's been looking for. This is her mother's ex-boyfriend that she blamed and been searching for years. That was a little too convenient. And I know they tried to explain it saying that Red is the one that kidnapped him and threw him in the truck and he was going to be delivering him to Park.
Right.
For whatever reason. And that was a little too much for me. But I don't know. The rest of the story was good. You know, they saved the day, of course, arrest the bad guys. What did you think of Aram's story?
I'm glad that we finally got an end to it, or it looks like an end to it. Because this is, you know, this whole thing with him and Elodie has been, it hasn't been bad, but it hasn't been fulfilling for me. You know, she's the danger junkie, adrenaline junkie, wants to do all this stuff. And essentially her husband is a vegetable and he's kept alive on life support. And like in the episode prior to this, they were sleeping together while he was in the same room and like Aram could hear all the machinery and everything. Yeah. And so basically he finally found out that, you know, this whole thing was a setup and that, yes, her husband was killed. And as one person said, they were like, judging from the looks of it, I'd say it was a mercy killing. Red told him that. He's like, you know, it was probably a mercy killing. But to Aram, it's still that she committed murder. So he arrests her and will probably be breaking up with her, I would assume.
But, I would assume that that's going to happen.
Yeah. It, you know, they had just talked about having a future together and now he's having her arrested.
That's exactly what it means. So, and he walks in and reads her rights. You know, you have the right to remain silent, yada, yada, yada. Do you understand these rights? She's like, no, no, I don't. And he's like, either do I.
Which, you know, if anybody was actually paying attention, that would get the case thrown right out.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. That would get thrown out pretty damn quick. Excuse me. That would definitely get it thrown out pretty damn quick. we got a couple more episodes left this season, I believe. I think you know, a few more episodes. And it's like the 25th.
We'll soldier through.
We'll get it done.
Somehow.
You know a movie I've never seen all the way through?
What's that?
Scarface.
No, me either.
Really think I should sit down and watch it. I mean, I've seen enough of it. I get the references, but I think it's just one of those movies I need to make a point to sit down and watch. It's on Hulu right now.
Oh, I was wondering what brought that up.
I saw it listed there the other day. Oh, you know what movie's on HBO right now? The Good Boys, or Good Boys, or whatever. So I'm going to watch that.
Good. I plan on watching that. I look forward to comparing notes on that.
Yeah. Let's see, what else? What else do we want to talk about this week?
Well, we've got Westworld and then the traditional news trailers and movies.
Yeah. Well, so what are you thinking of this season of Westworld as a whole?
I love it.
Yeah, I'm really getting into it myself. This episode we're going to talk about aired on April 5th, Mother of Exiles. And we finally get to see William again.
Yes.
And I'll just talk about William's whole story. When we first meet him, he is having visions of Emily and others, and he's shooting up his house, and he's in a great... I mean, he's lost his mind, basically, you know?
Yes.
And Charlotte... Go ahead.
She's fully talking to him. Like, Emily is giving full conversations.
And touching him and blaming him, and he's trying to explain and justify himself. And then Charlotte shows up and basically, you know, he at first thinks you're just a dream too. And she knocks the gun away. She's like, well, I'm alive enough. I don't want you pointing a gun at my face. And basically tells him, look, Sorak is trying to buy out Delos. We need you there for the board meeting that we're having tonight, an emergency board meeting. You need to clean yourself up, et cetera, et cetera. So William's whole story through this episode is him getting his shit together, cleaning up, showering, shaving, him and Charlotte having talks, this and that and everything. And then finally, near the end of the episode, he's got his act together and he comes outside and after having a talk with Emily again, and he leaves the house. And then that's when Charlotte's like, oh, are you talking to Emily? Did you convince her this time? And she basically reveals that she's been listening the whole time and knew he was having these delusions. There we go. And I'll skip the big reveal and get to the next part, which is that William is then committed to a mental institution. And that now that he's been committed, she is the acting president. She is now has control of all his shares of the company and his decision making while he's being institutionalized.
Right. Yep.
So that's William's big story.
It was nice to see him, but boy, he was a hurting unit.
Yes, he was. You want to tell us, Maeve's?
Yeah. So Maeve finally wakes up, and sorry, it's a little jarring for me because I did, like I said last week, I watched it right after we recorded, or like the next day, so that I kind of got to sit on it all week, and then tonight I watched it right before recording so that it was fresh. But the weird thing was that I watched it earlier in the day today. I had originally tried right after we recorded to watch it, but I was going to fall asleep. So I only got like 10, 15 minutes in. So I saw the first 15 minutes three times now. So it was kind of weird. So basically Maeve is talking to Serac, and, you know, he brought her to Shanghai, and she's like, you should have brought me to Paris. And he's like, oh, I forget, you know, where you've been. You don't realize. And he kind of gives us a quick flashback. But basically, when he was a kid, Paris got nuked. And so it's gone. Like, everything is gone there. But he talks to her about basically, I got the impression, and maybe this was much more blatant, maybe I was trying to read into it, but I got the impression that he's the one that controls that giant supercomputer that predicts the future.
Yes. Is that the impression I got that same impression.
Okay. Because he's telling her about different things that, you know, he foresees happening, and my power's back. He walks her through it. Basically, he brings her to this guy who is tied up, and he says, this guy, you know, did some work for Dolores, essentially. He says that Dolores is the enemy, and she, locked away in her mind, is the only key left to that special world where Maeve's daughter and all the others went. Mm-hmm. So this guy did some work for Dolores, and he's like, we need to get the information out of him. You know, where'd she go? What did she do? And the guy's like, I'll never talk. So Serac puts some glasses on him, and he says, I'm going to show him what's going to happen to his family if he helps me and if he doesn't help me. And the guy basically just spills the beans. He's like, I sent her to the mortician. That's all I know. Oh, okay, great. So then Serac shoots him and says, he betrayed his own kind. I think he means humans, because he specifically told Maeve that there's no outcome that he can see where her kind and my kind live in harmony. So he basically wants to shuffle off Dolores and Maeve and all those into that virtual world so that humans can stay humans. So then Maeve goes to find the mortician, and it was awesome because Maeve kicks ass, and out in the outer world, she seems to still have the ability to control technology, and she's damn good at it.
That was really interesting, actually, how she could still control technology out in the real world, if you will.
Yeah, it was almost a little too powerful at times. But for coolness factor, I let it go. But basically, she finds these, you know, Japanese gangbangers, and she's like, hey, I'm looking for the mortician. The guy's like, yeah, why don't you back off before we put you to work? And she just grabs the gun that's in his, you know, pants and points it right at his dick and is like, tell me where she is. Oh, we don't know where she is. We just get a phone number. So then she's like, she shoots him in the balls and says, guess you better call her. It was awesome. He gets wheeled in. The mortician lady is sewing up some bodies, and she doesn't even look over. She's just like, yeah, give him something to shut him up. I need to finish this. Maeve, you know, plays it cool again and tells her, you know, I need to know where Dolores is. And the woman's like, oh, I sent her to the Yakuza because she needed help smuggling out like 5 bodies or something like that. And so she's like, great, I'd like an introduction. So then Maeve goes to the Yakuza, and these guys jump up, and they have these weird, like, their guns have braces on their arms to help them aim. So, of course, that allows Maeve to control the braces because they're all technological, and she makes them shoot up the place and shoot themselves. And then like she runs
into, like, you're much too young to have a gun that aims for you.
So then she runs into Sato. And that's air quotes, because Sato is supposed to be the leader of this cell of the Yakuza, and she recognizes him as, was it Kenshi or Musashi?
Sato.
Well, that's who he's supposed to be for the Yakuza, but she recognized him from before.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Yes.
Yakuza. And she recognized him from, you know, in Westworld, well, from Samurai World, because she helped him escape. And he basically tells her, you know, you left us behind. You left everybody behind. We all had to fend for ourselves. And she's like, no, that's not how it works. And then she's like, no, he wouldn't say that.
So, yes. Yeah.
Again, skipping the whole big reveal, they fight. The two of them fight, you know, sword versus gun. And then the gun gets knocked away. And she ends up losing. And she's stabbed right in the gut and left to bleed out on the floor. Now, the interesting thing is Sato was down there like he was going to cut her head open. And then his men came in and they were like, hey, there's people outside. We can't hold them back. So he left without finishing the job.
Then we have Bernard's story,
which kind of crosses with
Dolores and Caleb. Yeah. Bernard and Liam.
I want to call him Aaron.
Yeah, I know, me too. Sasha. So Bernard and Ashley there, they believe Liam has been host swapped by Dolores. That's Bernard's theory. So he's got a device he can use to shut Liam down. So they all go to this masquerade party together to try to, because Bernard and Ashley want to get Liam. Ashley's a fella. And then Dolores and Caleb are there because they've already gone to the bank and taken all his money. And now they're there to get him.
Tell me something real quick. When they went to the bank to get his money, and there was that whole thing where they like took his blood, and she's like, yep, there's a marker in that blood, and you've got about 20 minutes before it degrades, so we've got to do this. Were you tense at all?
A little bit, yeah. I was a little bit.
It just,
because Dolores to me, is like,
it felt like it's so overused, you know, the whole, oh, we couldn't get a good reading, and then let me wipe off my hand. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that didn't bother me, but kind of like, I was a little bit, but I didn't think they were going to fail.
Right. Carry on.
So anyway, so basically they all find Liam and there's a showdown. Ashley and Dolores end up getting into a fight.
Which was awesome.
It was an awesome fight. Yeah. And
I love that he started off by saying, you know, it's not personal. And she's like, yeah, neither for me. You know, basically neither one of them wanted to do it, but they threw down beautifully.
She's like, well, you don't have to do this. He's like, yeah, thanks, Bernard. I actually do.
Yeah.
And, so Ashley and Dolores fight and Liam's friends there see Dolores at the party beating the shit out of Ashley, basically, in this fight. Bernard chases Liam down with Caleb. They all kind of meet up at the same time, and then Martin shows up, shoots the four bodyguards with him, holds them all at gunpoint, tells Liam to run, and tells Caleb, you better chase him down.
Yeah.
And then Bernard and Martin have a conversation. And this conversation between Bernard and Martin is happening the same time as Musashi and Maeve, and at the same time as Charlotte and William, you know, and basically we get the big reveal that Dolores is in all three of those other hosts, that Dolores has five copies of herself, because if you want something done right, you have to do it yourself.
Yeah. So the whole big mystery of who's in Charlotte Hale, it was her.
Yeah, it's Dolores isn't everybody because she didn't take anyone else that we're aware of. She copied herself and put herself in everybody.
So who's the fifth one?
Probably her as well. I don't know.
Well, no, I mean, like, who's the body? Because, like, we have...
Yes, we don't know because we know it's Dolores, Martin, Musashi, and
I was going to say Maeve, yeah.
Yeah, and so we don't know who the fifth one is yet. But Caleb and Dolores corner Liam to end up the episode. And what happened with Bernard and Martin? I'm trying to remember. Did we just leave them sitting at the vehicle? Did Martin make him get in the car?
Well,
I think Bernard made him get in the vehicle. Yeah.
Yeah, Bernard had the whole thing where he thought that Dolores was trying to replace Liam with a copy.
Right.
Yes, because he was convinced that the five pearls that she took were other hosts, but they were actually copies of herself. So Martin reached into his pocket and pulled out that little clicker thing that would, you know, shut down anyone, you know, any host. And told him to get in the car. And that was where we left that.
Yeah, that's right. That's what that was. Yeah. So it was a good episode. Good ending.
I love the reveal, and I love knowing it. It felt like all I could think of is the All Along the Watchtower playing when the four.
Oh gosh, I don't know.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I don't know if anything will ever beat the big Cylon reveal on Battlestar.
But that's what I. Yeah. But that's what I kept thinking of when all of them were revealing their identity at the same time. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah, no, that was a very similar feel. I got you there, but no, I don't think anything could top that. Whew.
Yeah, no.
All right, you watch any other shows, or is that everything?
I mean, I watched some other shows. You know, they had another heist episode of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which was phenomenal. I have been watching this third season of Ozark, and it's still a really cool crime drama show. I really enjoy it. The people are all assholes and they're all scumbags, but the show pulls it off. I just, it's a good background show for me. So yeah. But I think that was it for shows that I watched.
Did you watch any movies?
I did watch one movie. What about you?
I watched one new movie, and I watched a couple other older movies. Only one of the older movies I'm going to talk about real quick.
Okay.
Which is on Saturday night, Kanan wanted to watch a movie. And I said, what do you want to watch? He's like, oh, I don't know. Let's watch something funny. And I decided he's 14. He's old enough. Damn it. We're going to introduce you to Kevin Smith before he sucked.
Ooh.
And I threw Clerks in. And His first comment was, is this whole movie in black and white? I go, yes, but this is why. He maxed out all his credit cards. You know, he financed it himself, and black and white film stock was cheaper than color, so it's in black and white. And he was just like, oh, okay. But he loved it. He laughed at all the right parts. He enjoyed the clever dialogue. He really, really got into it, and he really liked it.
Interesting. See, I would have thought that it would have been hard because, A, he's never had a job. B, it's all in black and white. A lot of the humor is very high level.
Yeah.
And he's what, 14?
Yes.
So I would have thought that, you know, some of that would have been over his head, or it would have been, like, a bit too wordy at times.
Yeah.
But I'm glad he enjoyed it.
Yeah, no, I was a little concerned about that. I was like, do you like movies with a lot of dialogue or like long parts where actors talk for a long time? You know what I mean? I explained it to him in a better way than I'm doing right now. I'm failing miserably right now. But yeah, no, he was like, yeah, I'll check it out. So, but he really got into it. And it was funny because like a few of the jokes that like had really long setups or whatever, you know, he still got. And of course, he got the simple jokes, you know, like, I'm 37, and then my girlfriend sucked 37 dicks in a row, you know, and then when he yells at them, don't try to suck any dick while you're walking across the parking lot, and the guy turns to walk away, Kane's like, oh, look at that. So he got a lot of the simple jokes, but he got a lot of the complex ones, and like when Silent Bob and Jay come in at the end, Silent Bob does his whole speech about there's a lot of fine-looking women in the world, but not all of them bring you lasagna at work. Even right. Kane was like, he's got a point, you know. So I was quite impressed with how he picked up on it like he did. But
thanks.
Yeah, so probably next time he comes over, we'll watch Mallrats.
And see, that's where I thought you were going to go with that. I thought you were saying he wanted a comedy in his first Kevin Smith. I thought you were going to start with Mallrats.
Well, I wanted to go in order because I explained how, how the characters are related and the callbacks and everything like that and whatnot. And just how like, and it really got me thinking about it. And I actually been writing a blog on, I started a new blog, personal blog. I haven't really publicized it or anything, but I started writing about like Kevin Smith and my introduction which was working at the video store of all places. When I first found out about Clerks, and I watched Clerks, and then of course I immediately watched Mallrats and Chasing Amy, and I bought all three on DVD, and then Dogma came out a short time later. It had already been out at the theaters by the time I learned about it, but came out on home video pretty quick, and I rented. I immediately bought that, and you know how the original three, Clerks, Mallrats, and Chasing Amy, was his Jersey trilogy, and they all interlocked, and you know he had his first, you know, the View Askew universe was around before Marvel's and everyone else's. And if you remember on his website, he even sold that DVD slipcase that held the three DVDs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I almost bought it at one point, but I didn't in the end. And then I just really started thinking about how much I enjoyed all his stuff until he met Seth Rogen. And then after that, it's like I really haven't enjoyed any of his stuff. Everything went downhill after that, you know?
Right.
You know, everything, like even like his the Q&As he did, like An Evening with Kevin Smith 1, 2, and 3 were excellent. And then part 4 was after he met Seth Rogen. And basically he did a 2-hour rant about one question from Cop Out, about Cop Out, yep. Bruce Willis, you know. And I didn't even bother watching the 5th one. And I didn't care for, I haven't, since he started smoking pot, I haven't liked his movies. I haven't liked his podcast. I don't even listen to him. I haven't liked his Q&As. It's really amazing how you can go from really enjoying someone's work for so many years and loving the characters, and then to still watching because you're hoping to see something good again. Even this Giant Silent Bob reboot, the only redeeming part of the entire movie was the one part where Ben Affleck, as you know, his character from Chasing Amy, talks about, you know, his daughter Amy and this and that and everything. So, yeah. Rant over. Anyways, so we watched Clerks, and it's excellent still.
Nice.
The movie came out 25 years ago.
Is that all?
Yeah. Actually, maybe even 26. My math was bad.
I used to make it required watching for most of my friends. I'd be like, yeah, you got to watch this movie. If you haven't seen it yet, you got to watch it. If you like it, you can move on to Mallrats and such. Same thing when Dogma was out in theaters. I actually, like, took people to see it. I think I saw it like 5 or 6 times in the theaters because I'd be like, you're coming with me to see Dogma, and you're coming with me to see Dogma.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I, yeah. So, anywho. But yeah, the other movie I watched, the kids and I all watched Onward on Disney Plus on Sunday.
And I also watched that, I believe, on Sunday.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Paul watched that. A bunch of people, yeah. I know watched it. It must have been the Easter movie to watch this year because the Ten Commandments weren't on. So,
well, it was also, it's new. It was just in theaters and they shipped, yeah, it right to, you know, to kind of recoup some of that money. I was hoping they'd do the same thing with Mulan, but no such luck right now.
I know, me too, actually. So, but anyhow, what'd you think of it?
What'd you and the fam think?
Oh, everyone liked it in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone liked it in my house. Well, Kate didn't watch it. She took some time to be alone upstairs. But, you know, all the kids liked it. I liked it a lot. I thought it was an excellent film. It's probably one of the best Pixar movies in quite a while overall. What'd you think of it?
I loved it. Yeah. I loved the explanation of, you know, where magic has gone. And even though it was, the whole world was magical, you know, with elves and unicorns and stuff like that, it still felt like it was, you know, it was relatable to our world as it is.
Yep.
I thought the story was great. I thought the heartfelt messages were wonderful. I don't want to go into a lot of detail just because it is still fresh. And I honestly, I'm glad that many people watched it that you know of. I think a lot of people should just sit down and watch this. It was a great movie.
No, it really was a great movie. I mean, absolutely really was a great movie. And I guess, yeah, I don't want to really ruin it for anyone either because I think everyone should definitely go watch it. But yeah, I mean,
Star-Lord and Spider-Man are brothers and they go, yes, on a quest. And I loved Star-Lord's character. He had such a passion for life and, you know, the fact that to him, basically their version of Dungeons and Dragons was real. You know, it's all based on history. It was just great. I really, really liked it.
Well, that's the thing. Like, in this world that we're watching, everything was like magic was real, and but it was hard, and you had to work at it. But then everybody got lazy. Is basically the theme.
Yeah,
because magic was real, and then people got lazy and didn't want to do the work to learn magic and learn to and keep flying and run 70 miles an hour or this, that, or whatever. And
when, you know, the example that they showed was, you know, a wizard who walked by somebody's house at night and, you know, shot a fireball in that lit all their candles on fire so that they had light for the night. And he was trying to teach his apprentice and it was too hard. But then they looked over and somebody had invented electricity and the light bulb. And they were like, oh, that's easier. So that's kind of what happened. That's
right. And it's almost like a narrative on culture and society today where we've all gotten lazy and do the easy things now instead of working for things.
Yep.
But no, I thought it was a fantastic film. I thought they did a great job with it. And it was really nice to be able to, I popped a shit ton of popcorn for everybody else. And they all liked it. And we sat down and watched this really good movie. And I told all the kids, no tablets, no phones, no nothing. We're watching the movie. And that wasn't an issue. So,
which probably seemed very appropriate, you know, given the message of the movie as well, you know?
Yeah.
Technology and.
Yep. No tablets, no phones. We're watching this movie. We're paying attention to what's on the screen. This one big screen instead of everyone's little tiny screens.
Right. That's cool.
I don't have any news or trailers, really, to speak of.
I only have a couple little things.
Sure.
The two trailers that I watched are minor. One of them is called Middleditch and Schwartz. And it's a thing coming to Netflix. And it's Thomas Middleditch and Ben Schwartz, who are two awesome, funny guys. You'd know them if you saw them. You'd be like, oh, it's those guys. But basically, this is going to be a Netflix special that's three separate nights that they did complete 100% improv work.
Oh, okay.
They got in front of an audience and they were like, we have no idea what's going to happen. And they just, you know, they had the audience give them a suggestion, or they literally, like you could see in the trailer, that they talked to audience members, you know, like they had the camera on them and they'd be like, oh, I did this, blah, blah, blah. And so they would do an entire complete improv thing based on that. Three different shows, three different nights. I think it's going to be awesome.
That does sound awesome. Kind of like Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then the other one that I watched is another Netflix one coming out that seems interesting. It's called The Half of It. And it seems like it's basically Cyrano de Bergerac, except for this time there's, you know, the pretty girl and this guy that she kind of like, oh, yeah, I kind of want to be with him. And, you know, she kind of falls for him and he kind of falls for her. But he's getting all of his advice from a Asian girl who is also in love with her. So it's got that kind of twist to it. Seems interesting.
Modern twist. Yeah.
Yep.
All right.
Those
I
are
have
the only
a question.
Trailers. Yeah, go ahead.
Sorry. No, go ahead. You have something else?
Oh, I just had three news things.
All right, go ahead with them.
Emmanuel Shrieky has been cast as Lana Lang in the new Lois and Superman TV series. I like her. I think that's going to be a good shot
because I'm a big Superman fan.
Yes. Yes, you are. This one I sent to you, I'm excited about this. There's a documentary coming out on the making of Beetlejuice.
Yes, that looks awesome. I'm very excited about that. Yes.
Are you farther away from your phone or something? You're kind of broken up.
Nope. Hold on. Let me just adjust things.
Okay.
Is that better?
Kinda. Yeah. Yep. You're kind of crackly and fading in and out. And the last piece of news that I have to report on, because again, there's not, I was thinking about this the other day, you know, it used to be that there was entertainment news constantly, but right now the news is kind of focused on other things. And a lot of creative people aren't able to create right now because of everything going on with coronavirus. So it makes sense that there's not a lot of extra news, but This one is the is my duh news story of the week, and that's that Quibi has pretty much been shit upon because when they came out, they're only available on phones or tablets. They refuse to be on TVs. And now they're backpedaling on that and saying, oh, well, we always intended to also be available on TVs. That was just for down the road. But now that, you know, this pandemic has caused this, we're going to fast track having the availability on TVs.
I mean, the way they did it was new. They were trying to edge and everything. I think if people were at work more or on public more, they would want to watch these things on their phones.
Yep.
Because ones are basic at home.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you at all now.
I
heard the word must.
No, I haven't moved at all. I'm sitting in the same spot I have been all night. So,
huh? Yeah, that all came through perfectly suddenly.
Okay, interesting. Anyways, what I was saying, initially when they launched it, people could be out and about at work, traveling, mass transit, whatever you want to call it, you know, and right. People were out and about doing things. And so they would want to watch it on their phone because they'd have 10 minutes to kill while they're on train or on the bus or taking a break at work or something. But now everyone's stuck at home. They don't want to watch their phone.
Right.
So it was just a good idea, wrong release time type of thing, I think.
I agree completely. I think that they could have had something there, and they still would have had to go to TV eventually because it's just ridiculous to think that they would come out with something and restrict it like that when everything else these days is all about inclusivity. You know, we right. want you to be able to watch this in as many places as possible, and for them to come out and be like, we want you to be able to watch it in as few places as possible, it just seems stupid.
And there's a lot of great content that they've spent a lot of money on that people are interested in watching, and they definitely want to make sure it gets out there and people are subscribing. So,
yeah, they do.
I just have a quick question for you.
Absolutely.
With this pandemic thing going on and the movie theaters being shut down, how does that affect your Regal Unlimited?
Well, two interesting factoids from that. One, they've already suspended all payments for Regal Unlimited, so they're not billing at all, which is nice. But two, I don't know if you saw this. I should have added it to my news list. AMC Theaters, which is the biggest. Regal is the second biggest in the U.S., but AMC is the actual biggest. They, as a result of this, they filed for bankruptcy.
No shit.
Yeah. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go out of business. Plenty of businesses filed for bankruptcy. Oh, yeah. I think Sears filed like 6 times.
Service Merchandise did a bunch before they went out of business.
Yep. I think it's just basically they're doing it for protection while this is going on. But it still begs the question or makes you kind of open your eyes to what happens afterwards, you know. Now that we've seen, and you and I have talked about this before, we might have even talked about it last week. Now that we've seen that they can release new movies direct to video like they have been. And, you know, maybe they're going to turn a profit on some of these things. When you initially look at it, like, say, The Invisible Man or The Hunt, and you're like, $20, come on. But if you and I, two grown adults, decided we wanted to go see The Hunt at theaters, it would cost us $10 each just for the tickets.
Yeah, easily. Yeah.
So it kind of makes sense in that respect. They're basically saying, you know, if two people are chipping in, you're paying your movie theater fee.
Yeah, and but also you're paying for the ambiance of the giant screen and the sound and everything else in there as well.
Absolutely. Yes.
But
yes, you are.
I do very vividly remember that when Super was released several years ago, you know which movie I'm talking about?
Oh, I sure do.
Yeah. It was in theater down in the Nickelodeon, and it was also released on demand at the same time. And it was a scenario for me of, or what we decided was, well, there was going to be three or four of us going down to see this movie. Why would we go down and see it on, you know, at the theater when we can watch it from the privacy of our home on demand?
Yep, exactly.
And on demand was like $8, and it would have cost us over $20 at the theater. So we made the choice there to save money and save the drive and everything over. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, that's the choice we made there.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens at the end of all this. I don't think this is going to be the death knell for theaters in general.
No, I don't think.
I think that it will cause them to reassess. I think you may see some changes as a result of this. And I also think that, you know, there's talk about, you see some of these countries, like say Korea right now, where they reopened the country and they got hit by another wave of it. It's still going through. So if that kind of thing happens and there are more lockdowns, then it could start to be a bigger conversation of, okay, how are we going to handle this from now on? But I think it'll be interesting to see what the long-term effects on the movie theaters are.
Yeah, I'm curious myself. And I mean, not to close out on a downer by any means, but it is really frustrating. I understand why people want to get, you know, the economy back open, this and that and everything. But I'm not super excited to go run and jump into a big group of people anytime soon.
Me either.
You know, and it's like, yeah, I'd love to be able to go to the theater again and sit in the theater and watch a movie on a big screen and see these new movies and everything. And yeah, I'd love to go to live wrestling again or go to a concert or just go sit at a restaurant and eat. Well, maybe not so much that one, but you know what I mean. Be out and about and
sit across the table from me and record a podcast.
Or sit next to you at a table and record a podcast. Exactly. Just anything like that would be awesome. I just feel like if this is the peak today, let's just say, well, that means we got 6-8 weeks before it's over. Not even, you know, before it winds back down to where it was when it started ramping up. Because it took 6-8 weeks to get here, so it's going to take 6-8 weeks to get down. I mean, that's my thought process behind it, but, you know.
Oh, sorry, June, yeah. Because that's the rest of April and all of May.
Exactly, yeah, it's the rest of April and all of May, so it's almost like shit. I don't know. Strange times. In 5 years, we'll be looking back at this going, remember Corona? Holy shit.
It'll be like how you and I talk about the ice storm.
Essentially, yeah.
Or the other ice.
Yeah, the ice storm of 98. Not the ice storm of 2013, the ice storm of 98.
Right. So.
Or like New Yorkers talked about 9/11.
Right.
You know, because they lived it.
Yep, exactly.
But this is different from all of those because it essentially shut the country down now for a month and a half. With a month and a half of shutdown to go, you know, schools being closed since March, for crying out loud. They're closed to the end of the school year. And then some scientists saying Corona is going to be with us forever, like the flu and pneumonia. We just have to develop a vaccine for it and everyone's got to get vaccinated.
Right.
Except those parents that don't vaccinate their kids.
Yeesh. That's for another podcast.
That's not for us to talk about, but anyhow, I guess that's it for me, though, in the long run. How about you?
I believe that's it for me as well.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm on Twitter. I'm Superstar ML.
I'm the Quantum Geek, G33K.
And that's the show.
That is. We will talk to you next week.